Welcome to another episode of Brews and Cruise. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and I am here today with the person who actually owns the Speakeasy Studio, my dad, Rich Jacobson. Rich, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's about time I got here. I had to wait for tax season to get over.
Well, the hardest thing was scheduling your time since you're one door away. Yeah. But today you have requested the Bailey's for our drink of choice, and this is the first Bailey's we've had, and we're going to have... I don't drink this normally, so this is going to be interesting.
You just sip it. It's just a treat drink. It's nothing to get drunk on. It's nothing to quench your thirst. That was a gift from my friend Kent, who's the president of the Winona Housing Association, and he gave me that as a gift a couple of weeks ago.
All right. So Ken Grover, shout out to Kent Grover. Ken Grover. Hopefully he's watching.
Yep.
Well, I got some ice made up for us.
Oh, that's pretty handy.
Let's crack. It is pretty handy. Let's get some ice into our... Well, you know what will be easier is if I just do this.
Don't get the table wet.
Table is an antique and it's fine. So anyways.
Yeah, that's plenty of ice.
I'll let you pour how much you want. I'll pour how much I want.
Shake it just a little bit.
Shake this.
It's been sitting.
Why do you shake Bailey's?
I don't know. Make sure it's not separated. It's been sitting for a couple weeks.
All right. It's been sitting for a couple weeks,
folks. I don't even know if it's open yet, is it?
It wasn't until I opened it.
Okay.
So now it's open.
All right. Well, I'm still drinking from one that was from Christmas.
How much do you normally have?
That's enough. Like that's enough? Half a glass, yes.
Okay.
It's more of a dessert drink.
You want me to pour yours? You pour
Sure,
it.
Go ahead.
All right. I am the host. I can pour.
Otherwise, my drink of choice is Island City High Forest. Not many beers that I drink, but that one I do drink.
High Forest is a staple at Island City. Grab your drink. We shall do a toast.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers with Bailey's.
So this is the dessert drink, huh?
Yes. Somebody turned it on to me as at a Christmas party for one of my clients, Max's Bar and Restaurant, and they knew I didn't drink, but they thought I should have something to drink, so one of the bartenders gave me a taste of Bailey's, and ever since then, I've liked it.
It's got a chocolatey taste to it, so yeah. I guess it's kind of a dessert-type drink. For sure, I don't think I would slam a bunch of these. I don't think you'd even take shots of these.
I've never done a shot in my life. I've never slammed a shot. I've sipped the shot glass, but I've never slammed down a shot.
So I guess the brewski shot is out of the question.
I don't think we'll do the brewski. Sorry, Justin.
Sorry.
When I see people do a shot, they make the ugliest face like it hurts.
How's it look?
And then they want a chaser. I'm like, if a shot hurts that bad and it tastes that bad, why do you even do it?
Well, it's the easiest way to get messed up.
You don't want to get messed up.
Well, some people do.
Okay.
So anyways, you own the garage. How long have you had the garage for?
I bought it in 2017 in September. I spent about 4 months solid in here getting it ready for Christmas Eve, and I just barely made it for Christmas Eve party. So that's 4 solid months I spent in here. Nobody saw me at the Y for 4 months. I didn't go to the office much. Worked at home at night just to be here painting, tiling, doing wood, trim, putting on hardware, light fixtures, hanging all these neon signs. I believe there's like 36 signs here that we had to hang, stained everything on the ceiling. So I bought it in 17, and I've been working on it. Every year I do another project here.
So were some of the signs already here?
Some were here from the previous owner, but I bought those from him and hung them in different locations.
Okay.
So everything's been rehung to where I like it, certain heights, certain themes.
Now, some of these we concocted out of our mind, like the one that's above us that you can't see right now, but there's one.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, it's an old Thunderbird logo. If anybody knows what the Thunderbird logo looks like, it's almost like a turquoise blue with a little bit of red on it. It's very long. Almost looks like the Chrysler I would say the Chrysler brand logo is what it kind of looks like, but we have one hanging right above us, and it's actually one that we took a photo of, sent it to a guy, what is he, in Texas?
Texas.
He's in Texas, and he just forms them up. Now, the ones that you see in here are not original, so if you're watching on YouTube, these are not originals. These are all just replica or remakes of signs, but they are fashioned after the old school ones, because if you want an old one, they're going to cost you big bucks.
A lot. Original ones... Like the other one you can't see, the Ford Jubilee.
Yep.
There's a used one on eBay. It's been there for a couple of years, and they're asking $58,000, and it doesn't even work. these here run anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 each. But if you had an original, like I said, $58,000, it doesn't work. You'd have to get it fixed to make it work. Neons are really touchy. They're fragile. You can see one of them out back there. Part of the colors are out, and we're going to get that one fixed next week. But you got to keep an eye on them because the neons go out, and you got to replace the ballast and put neon gas in it. So
for those who are watching, these are actually neon. They're not the LED like most people have nowadays. These are actually neon bulbs with the gas going through them. They're just replicas of old signs. So specific people have to deal with these, and there's a lady out of Hoka. She's one
the lady that does my repairs is out of Hoka. She worked for a sign company down La Crosse. And she really knows what she's doing. She just works from her house. She does a lot of neon work, but I just talked to her today, in fact. And I'm taking one down there next week to have her see if the gas is out of it or the ballast is out of it.
So a lot of work that's in here that some of you can only see from the camera angle has been done by you, right?
The work?
Yeah.
Pretty much 80, 90% of it has been done.
The garage floor, you did that. You did. You stained all the rafters.
The only thing I didn't do is the bar was already here. The bar was built. So that was here. And that's why you wanted me to buy it, because of the bar.
Right, so I could do this.
other than that, you know, we did all the tile work and the painting.
Yeah.
Put in heating and air conditioning units. So it's really balanced now. Put a new roof on, put the new floor in, new garage doors, alarm system, cameras. It's been almost 7 years now, and like I say, every year we do something else.
So the guy that we bought this from, he actually has a really big place now that you sold him back in 2017, where he now does auto auctions there. He has his own car museum with millions of dollars worth of cars, and a lot of people come here and I go, you should see what the guy now has that we bought this from, because everyone thinks this is amazing, which I think it's amazing too, but when you go and look at what he actually has now... It's huge, and now he started his own classic car auction, and they do it twice a year. So that's kind of fun to go to, but he built a city or a town in his, which is nuts, and I like to have more space. So if you had to choose one of the signs that's your favorite, which one is it in here? Is it one that someone could see?
It's probably the Thunderbird right above our heads. the Dog and Suds, you can't see that one from the camera.
Nope. If anybody knows what Dog and Suds are, it's a neon sign with a dog holding a tray of hot dogs, and it looks like a beer or a beer.
Root beer.
And it's got Dog and Suds with an arrow on it. It's really unique. It's a very big sign.
That's a franchise restaurant, hot dog stand out of Illinois, I believe they're from. So
okay.
There are still Dog and Suds around. And that, like I said, that sign is replicated from what they have hanging in front of their restaurants.
Now, for some of you who are watching, you'll notice in the back on the right side, you'll see a Shelby sign that kind of, we already had that one there, and it just so happens I have the Shelby Mustang that you can see sitting right behind us. But we have a one-of-one sign here, and that's the Supra one back there. It is red with white lettering, and on it, it actually says 1166 on it, because that was the car number that we have for the launch edition of the Supra. So that's kind of a unique sign that literally nobody else has, and I think I kind of came up with that one a little bit myself. I don't know, but then you'll see over your head the RJ. Now explain the RJ, because nobody gets it. I don't know.
Well, RJ are my initials, R and J, but if you spell it out to make a word, you would spell it A-R-J-A-Y, RJ. Pretty simple concept to me. So that's what we named the car collection, is the RJ collection. I used to have an office building downtown called the RJ Office Building, which I sold, and it's no longer the RJ Building. But I've been using that logo and that combination, but it's still, people can't quite figure it out, but it's pretty simple to me.
Yes, it's just your initials spelled out. Like if mine are CJ, So I would spell it S-E-E-J-A-Y or S-E-A-J-A-Y, whatever. That would be my initials spelled out. Yours are R-J, so it's A-R-J-A-Y. Now his initials are R and J, but it's the R-J collection. So for those who are confused as to what that might be back there, or some of you that don't understand how to spell out a letter, that's what that sign's all about.
Well, we were trying to come up with a name for the building and for the signs or the cars, and just something that we had to go with for now. Could change once I'm gone. It might be the CJ collection. It might be something else. Who knows?
Well, I think we're working on getting one on the outside of the building.
Yes. That one will say Brews and Crews.
I think so. Yeah. It'll say
Brews and Crews. Headquarters of Brews and Crews podcast. So that sign is under construction right now.
Yep.
That's a huge one, and that's also neon.
I think it's going to be LED neon, though.
Oh, it could be.
Well, depends on what we choose.
Well, LED would last longer outside.
Right.
But, yeah, that neon, boy, that's expensive stuff. And if somebody threw a snowball at it, you'd totally ruin it.
Yes.
But neon looks nicer. It just does not hold up like LED does.
No.
And LED is way cheaper to run. You can run LED all day for just pennies. I think it's like 6 cents to run a light bulb all day.
Right.
You run these neons, and they're really expensive. There's like three ballasts in them and transformers. So, first of all, it makes the signs really heavy, and it uses a lot of electricity.
So how much in signs do you think is in here, money-wise?
Well, I insured them for like $75,000, but they are probably closer to $100,000 right now.
Okay.
Neon signs have gone way up. Some of them have actually doubled.
It's actually, isn't it hard to even get them now?
Yeah, it's very hard. If you order one, it would be a year to 2 years to get them.
Wow.
And like I see, some of these that were only $3,000 to $5,000 are like $10,000 a piece right now. That's how much they've gone up in like 6 years.
Which one do you think is $10,000? The Duesenberg?
Oh, that Duesenberg is probably pretty expensive because there's like five colors in that one.
Yeah, there's yellow, white, blue, red. A turquoise. So one's big too.
Now Jim has one of those. We're talking about Jim Remlinger, who has the Remlinger muscle car out on Service Drive. We can give a shout out to Jim and his family.
Shout out to Jim.
He's got an auction coming up, but he has the Thunderbird one like I have here and the Duesenberg. So we have two of them I think that match. And I'm always trying to get more from him, but he doesn't want to part with his either because they're hard to get.
Yeah, and he knows the guy in Texas that makes them, right?
Yeah, that's my connection to the Texas guy.
The next one we need is a Harley one because now I switched from Indians to Harley.
So did I.
Yeah, so did you. You just got a new anniversary Fat Boy. That one's pretty sweet out there.
It must be. I only rode it once in September.
How many miles does it have?
I got 12 miles on it. Brand new cycle in September. But see, I had knee surgery in October.
Yeah.
October 3rd, so that took care of the rest of the cycle season for me. And I hope to get back into it soon and put maybe another 13 miles on this summer.
That's across town and back. So when we look at the collection of cars in here, how many you got? How many do we have?
I think there's in this building, I think there's 15, if I remember right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, moms is 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I count 14.
Model A up front.
Oh, and the 15 Model A.
Plus the motorcycles.
So which one's the first car that started all this off?
Well, the one that I've had the longest is probably the 55 Chevy.
Not the T-Bird?
Well, the T-Bird I bought brand new right after 9/11, which was in 01.
Yeah.
And the 55 Chevy I bought really close to that time. I had a 55 Chevy in high school. Kept it for about 10 years and sold it to a guy in Milwaukee. And then when eBay came along, I punched in sedan delivery just for the heck of it. And sure enough, there was one for sale in Florida. So I bid on it, not knowing much about eBay at the time. I bid on it, got the bid, got lucky. The guy shipped it. I sent him the money. Today, people get ripped off when they try to buy cars online. And you don't get the title. You don't get the car. You lose your money. I didn't really know what I was doing because eBay was brand new.
Yep.
But I sent the deposit. He sent the car. We met him at the Fleet Farm parking lot to unload it.
I remember that.
So it came on a truck, and they had to move a couple other ones off there. But it was a pretty good transaction. I've had that one for about 20 years now, maybe more.
Okay. So for those who are wondering, a sedan delivery looks close and similar to a Nomad, but it's not a Nomad. What's the difference?
The Nomad is sportier. It's got ribs in the back tailgate. It's got ribs across the roof, slanted forward. The ribs are slanted forward. It's got wheel cutouts for the size of the shape of the wheel, where the sedan delivery doesn't.
The fenders go over it?
Yeah, the fender covers a part of it. So it's a sedan delivery, but people that think they kind of know something about it will ask me, you still have that Nomad from high school? Yep. I'm like, never had a Nomad in high school. In fact, my nickname when we had CBs was Nomad.
Sweet.
So when we had CBs, they'd call me Nomad. I'm like, I don't have a Nomad, but I'll go with it. And but it's really a sedan delivery.
That was your handle, Nomad?
Handle. Oh, yeah, my handle was Nomad.
Okay, wow.
Hey, pretty. Nomad, you got your ears on?
So that was before cell phones, folks. And if anybody out there is 20 years old listening to this, you don't know what that is. So, okay, that was these are like your first two cars, and now we have 15 different ones in here. Which one is the favorite?
You know, people ask me that when they come here, and it's either the 57 Chevy, because that's my newest one. I've had that about 2 or 3 years, maybe.
Yep.
The white Thunderbird behind us.
That was sweet.
Now, that's a 57, and if you watch American Graffiti, Suzanne Summers was in a 56, and people will ask me that, too. Is that like the same car that Suzanne Summers was in American Graffiti? Well, it's similar, but this is a 57 T-Bird. So that one's fun to drive.
Yeah. And
they're all fun to drive, or I wouldn't have them.
Right. Well, if you're looking on the YouTube, you'll see over his left or his right shoulder, I guess, you'll see a white car. That's the one we're talking about. And then just two cars down, you'll see the red one. It's the 57 Chevy. That one is sharp. That one gets a lot of looks for sure, I think. So we're going to start getting more cars. Is that right?
If we get more, we have to eliminate some just because it's hard to take one out without moving things. And I hate doing that. I've always wanted a garage where I can just drive out and then drive back in. I don't want to have to move two or three of them to get to the different one and then put them back away.
Right. And if you notice behind us, you'll see the cars are lined up behind us. It's not on purpose. It's because we've run out of room. So we have two cars down the middle. So if you want to take one out, we have to kind of maneuver and shake them around a little bit in order to get them out.
But they're all at an angle pointing towards the front door.
Yep.
So you can drive right out. And when you come back, you can come in the back door and back in place if these two down the middle weren't here. Other than that, I got plenty of space to open the doors. That's another thing. I didn't want them so tight that you can't open the door.
Yep.
So I could get more cars if I put them tighter, but I don't want to mess with that.
If you had to get rid of one of them, which one would it be? It's like getting rid of your kid. Which one do you got to get rid of?
The only one would be maybe the Chrysler Crossfire.
Damn, you can't even see it. It's so small back there.
It's way in the back.
My cousin said it looks like a dog taking a dump.
That's what they say about the Crossfire, but I don't know. People like that one, too. The one they get the most looks at is the race car. That's the cheapest one in here is the race car.
Yeah, we discussed that on one of the podcasts. It's over my shoulder here. It's a red race car. It's got a lot of history in Winona around here. Your friend Carl Fenske was the one that owned that one and raced that one specific, and then someone restored it.
Yeah, it's number 99, I think, on camera. You can see the 99 back there.
Yeah, you might be able to see that.
And it was raced in the late 70s. It won a lot of feature races. Carl put it away and moved up to hobby stock, late model, modifieds. He went all the way up the whole chart and was good at every race he was in.
Yes.
He was so good that people got jealous and didn't want him to win. You know how somebody wins everything and you're like, you don't want the guy to win? And that's the only thing people didn't like about him.
Oh, so the Yankees.
He was so aggressive and he was so good at it, people just wanted to beat him. So it was fun to watch him. And he died just in the last couple of years, suddenly.
Yep.
And the car had just been redone right before that, and it was in Rochester in a warehouse.
Was it a friend of his that restored it?
No, just a guy that he restores race cars, and he did a couple of them. And he bought it from Elmer's Junkyard. It was sitting at Elmer's, kind of rusted out, and the guy took it in and built it back from pictures. It's got the same lettering on it, the same advertising, the same pit crew. Everything's pretty much the same. That started out as a 57 Chevy convertible. And the reason for the convertible is a heavier car, and it was well-built. And then he, first car that he put a roof on it to make it look like a two-door. So it went from a convertible to a two-door. And it's a heavy car. But he did really good with that car.
Yeah, well, what model is that? A 50?
The Chevy? Race car is a 57 Chevy.
57 Chevy. So just like the red one, except for a race car.
Just like the red one, but it started as a convertible.
And now you take that over every year to Mississippi Thunder.
I take it to the Carl Fenske Memorial. They asked me to bring it over. I could drive it around the track and get it all dirty and muddy, but I won't do that. It starts, it runs. I drive it up the trailer. We take it on a trailer. During the national anthem, we do one lap. Last year, I think his daughter and
one of her friends, I think.
And one of her friends was in it. I think that's on Facebook. But they rode in it, held the American flag, and we do that once a year. I think we've done it two or three years now, and it's coming up again here pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it's right in the beginning of May.
I would love to drive it around the track. And just
be sweet.
Because I raced for one full year and part of another year. So I'd love to do it, but I just don't want to bring it home all full of that dirt and clay that gets stuck underneath it.
Yeah.
Then I'd spend hours washing it.
Yeah, and if you need a race car card, trading card from 1995, he has one.
Sure do.
Still
should have brought my trading cards from 95. I raced 95, and then a little bit in 96 with my brother.
I have a trading card. You should have had your trading cards out here. We can autograph them.
I think there's some
out
in the office. I bought 1,000 of them, and after handing them out to kids and autographing them, I probably have 900 left.
Sweet.
Kids like that, though. They like the autographed pictures. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
They like the autographed picture, but like I said, I start with 1,000 and I end up with 900 still.
So if you get rid of one car, what's the next one going to be in here? What's the one you're looking for?
I think you would have to make that decision. I don't know.
Well, no, my taste is expensive. That's a GT40.
But to get rid of, though. You said which one to get rid of?
No, what would you get in replace?
Oh, you know, we've been kind of looking at the new Corvettes. One hasn't really clicked. They're about $100,000. Some
depends.
Are 100 and, yeah. 120. Although you can get the cheaper models at about 80. So, you know, I guess that would be a possibility. But I'd hate to have $100,000 sitting there and drive it like twice a year.
Yeah, well, you got more than that sitting around here than of them.
Oh, there's a lot more.
Often.
There's a lot more than that.
Yeah, I know.
But you're talking the Ford. Which one? GT?
The GT40.
That's you can't touch those for under $400,000.
I know.
And they're probably close to $500,000 this year.
Yeah, Remlinger had one at his auction. Was it last summer? That one went for $395 or $360
plus commissions.
Yes.
So it's like $410,000 when it was done.
Yeah, that one only had 1,100 miles on it, I think, and that was sweet. It was white with the blue stripes. And if anybody's listened to this before, they know that that's my dream car to have. It used to be a Viper, and I would love a Viper too, but a Ford GT40 would be the ultimate. White with the blue stripes, I think, is my favorite.
I'm just not sure I want to drive a $500,000 car down the street and then park at Menards or Walmart and run in for something. I'd have to park so far away.
Yeah.
And the insurance is probably a killer on those cars.
Okay, well, now the other thing that you're big into is income tax.
Not as big as I used to be.
Not as big as you used to be, but you always were excited about income tax, it seemed. What would make that even exciting?
I don't know if I was excited about it. It's more exciting on April 15th when it's pretty much over and you got done working many, many hours. I mean, a lot of people think that accounting and tax work is boring.
I would think so. It seems quite boring.
But you know what? They probably have never seen or worn one of these. So
what is that?
I brought one of these. This is a green visor. Accountants used to wear that, like, behind the bank window.
Behind the bank window?
You know, like at the teller.
Oh, yeah?
They count out your money at the bank. Now, I would put this on, but I want to mess up my hair.
Yeah, we don't want that to happen.
I brought this for you to wear to see how excited accounting can be.
This looks like something my grandma would wear playing cards.
Now, Josh Harrison, if you're listening.
Yeah, if you know Josh, he was on episode 2.
He's an accountant.
Two.
Yes. He probably would like one of those green visors.
Well, I can gift him one. He should come back on so I can gift him one. He was on episode 2, if you don't remember. He's the guy with the bourbon. He is a big bourbon guy, but he's also an accountant. So when it comes to accounting, how did you ever get into accounting if it's not that exciting without this?
When I was in high school, and all the teachers would ask you, what are you going to do after high school? Or a counselor or a teacher? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I like working on cars. Maybe I'll go into body work or a mechanic. And they always say, well, you're good with numbers. Why don't you be an engineer or an accountant? And I'm like, I don't know what that is. And I can't really afford to go to college. We had, like, no money. So I checked into the vocational school, which was free education in 1975, and I took the accounting class. It was a 2-year class. There was no tuition. You just paid for books and registration fee. And I went into accounting not even knowing what it was.
Okay.
And then I went to work for a CPA firm like the day after graduation. Graduated on a Saturday night, started Monday morning at a CPA firm in Winona. I did 4 years with a CPA firm, and then I went out on my own in like 81. And in 81, I started doing taxes and accounting and bookkeeping. I decided that the taxes was what I really liked doing. I like meeting with clients once a year, get the job done. They get a nice refund. They're all happy. You get paid. You talk to them about, you know, their families and stuff for 1 year, and then you don't see them again until the next year.
Sounds good.
So it's like automatic business if you're good at it. And I had between 400 and 500 clients every year.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, that was many, many hours. I had to average, I think it was 5 tax returns a day for about 100 days of tax season to get my 500 in, and then there's extensions. So I did a lot of tax returns.
So is there some that are easier and some that are harder?
Oh, yeah. And today, the easy ones people are doing online with TurboTax and everything else. I mean, the government has made the easier ones a little more easier.
That's surprising.
The complicated ones are more complicated. And so there's more and more people that can do their own. I don't know that they're always getting the right results. I really have my doubts that people are really getting everything by doing it themselves, but they feel better about it. But when it comes to the complicated ones, it takes a lot of studying. I got 48 tax seasons.
Yep.
There's still things I got to look up. There's still things I have to study. They change the laws every couple of years, and then you got to read the new regulations, and you try to memorize them, and try to throw out the old ones out of your mind, and try to remember what the new rules are. And it's the complicated tax returns are many, many hours.
So what makes something or a tax return complicated?
I would say depreciation with rental properties, investment properties. Depreciation gets to be the tough one for most people. How to depreciate, how much to depreciate, and then you got to plan for the day you're going to sell that depreciated asset because it comes back and gets you later.
Okay.
What depreciation does is it delays some of your income until down the road, and people think it's great you're saving tax by having depreciation, but when you sell that asset, you got to bring that back and pay tax on what you deferred is what it is. It's deferred. So you got to plan ahead of how long a person's going to have a property. Then you get into vehicle expenses and mileage and stuff like that. And that kind of stuff takes a lot of work.
So everyone always says that there's quote unquote loopholes in the system. What are they talking about when they're talking about loopholes? As far as I know, you go to jail if there's a loophole.
No, a loophole is just a person that doesn't really understand what they're talking about. They're talking about a tax break that is totally legal. The Congress puts it there because they want you to use it. And if you use it and they think you've got a lot of money, they think you're using a loophole. Well, loopholes is just a name for a tax strategy that's legal. It's perfectly legal. Like depreciation.
Right.
It's not a loophole, but you are writing off part of the cost of the asset to save income tax. And you don't have a choice on that either. In depreciation, they make you take it.
Right.
If you don't take it, it'll be assessed the depreciation. So you got to take it. And then when you sell, you got to bring that depreciation back and pay tax on it at 25% maximum tax rate federal plus Minnesota. So loopholes, no. If people are saving tax by something else, it's totally fraud.
Right.
But most people that I know totally follow the rules because if you get scrutinized through an audit, you don't want to be in that trouble.
People have got
worse sentences for prison from tax evasion than they do for serious crimes.
Oh.
I mean, you can go back to even murder. You can go back to the gangster days and they couldn't put John Gotti away. They couldn't put away the gangsters for murder. But once they got him on tax evasion, they put him in prison for that.
Holy smokes.
So you don't want to mess with the IRS with tax evasion. It's just the worst thing you can do.
Okay, so for those who are listening, loopholes aren't exactly what you're thinking, which is trying to find a way to save money. It's just a tax break.
It's a tax strategy that's totally legal.
Man, this is fun with this hat on. You talked about gangsters. That's pretty fun. I don't know. I mean, like you said, they couldn't get put away for murder, but then the tax evasion got them. So that's really kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, even there's been porn dealers around here, some in the city, some. They try to get them on, you know, illegal things like. They try to put them away for indecency. Okay. And you can't. You can't, because indecency is, like, subjective. There's no real good definition of it. But as soon as you get stuck with or get hit with that tax evasion, you're going to jail, and all the indecency stuff that you were doing doesn't matter.
Okay. So don't do that, folks. So yeah. If someone want, what's the best way to use a tax break for someone who is maybe newly married? Because that's me. I'm newly married. What would you do to have a good tax break to save some money?
Well, there's not a lot you can do without investing in things.
Okay.
See, every time the government wants something happen in the economy, they set up tax incentives, like the electric car for one.
Yeah.
They want you to have electric car, so there's tax credits for electric car. At one point, they wanted you to have investments in real estate, so there's depreciation to get into real estate. They wanted you to be in the stock market, you get capital gains breaks by paying tax on a percentage of it. So there, whatever way they want to spur the economy, they try to put some kind of a tax incentive in there. There's oil and gas drilling incentives. There are things like that. There's employment credits to get you to employ people. So there's not a lot of stuff the average person can do. But since the Trump tax breaks of 17, everybody's gotten some big tax deductions, from the standard deduction, the child tax credit. Everything went way up. The child tax credit almost doubled. The standard deduction did double. So the tax breaks of 17 are going to expire after this year.
Okay. Oh, that's a good thing for people to know.
Unless somebody renews them, depending on who becomes president and which Congress, if they leave the tax the way it is, it's fine. But right now, Trump had rolled everything back in 17, and it's going to expire in 24.
All right. So, folks, for listening, those breaks that you may or may not be aware of are going to be expiring.
Yes. The standard deduction is the big one.
Okay, standard deduction. So
what that means is you just get a standard deduction right at the top of your income.
Okay.
Without itemizing or anything. And that got really big, so you don't have to go through the itemizing as much.
All right. Is it easy to do on TurboTax if you have a simple tax return?
The standard deduction?
Well, all of that, yeah.
Yeah, I would think that would be easy enough to do. I think the program would do it for you.
Okay. You do my taxes, so I don't really know what's going on. All I know is you just telling me to give me my expense sheets and stuff and my income, and here you go.
And I don't do much tax anymore. I sold that business, as you know. I sold it twice. I sold it I first sold it in 2005, and then I started getting all my clients back without even trying. I sold it in 2005. I sold the business, and that guy that bought it ended up in a rest home, a nursing home, so he couldn't complete any more taxes. So then all my clients started coming back, and I didn't really want to take them back. I was trying to get out of it because I'm in real estate. So then I built the practice back up without trying, and I sold it again in like 2019, I think. So I only do like certain friends, family. I don't do a lot of them, nowhere near the 400 or 500. I couldn't do that many anymore.
How many do you do now?
Probably 10 to 15.
Oh, well, that's a lot less.
Well, yeah.
Except for yours, it's complicated.
Well, the ones I do are complicated.
Yeah. So if you have a complicated tax return, you got a lot of investments, you're probably not going to want to try to use TurboTax, correct?
Oh, gosh, no.
No.
TurboTax has no idea. It's not going to sit there and ask you questions and find out your lifestyle to know what you should have.
Okay. Well, then that brings me to my next point. You're in real estate, as you just mentioned. That was fun. Let's turn it backwards now. I got my hat backwards. This is the fun part. Now, we're both in real estate, but you've been in it for 40-plus years.
41 years. I got licensed in 83.
All right. So you got into that shortly after, it sounds like, from taxes.
I was in accounting since 77, so I was in for like 6 years, yeah. Thinking of making a career change in 6 years. And I couldn't decide which one I liked better or which one I hated worse. So instead of getting out of one, I thought I would work them both and see which one I liked. And the thing is, I never got rid of either one of them until I sold my practice. But, you know, during tax season, you're just swamped for 3-4 months. And I'm not the kind to sit around for the next 9 months waiting for another tax season. So I got my real estate license to, you know, have something to do between tax seasons.
Yeah.
And then they just went hand in hand since 83.
So what made you want to get into real estate? Because you said that you were possibly into body work or mechanic work at Votech.
Well, you know, I got to see clients' tax situations, and people that were buying rental properties were, you know, looked like a pretty good investment.
Yeah.
As
they
you,
are.
As you own the property and work with it and make the payments, your mortgage goes down and down and down. And with inflation, your rent goes up and up and up, and the value goes up. So every year you hang on to it, the value goes up, the mortgage goes down, and you're gaining equity.
Yep.
And eventually, if you keep it long enough, 15 to 30 years, depending on your mortgage, then you have it paid off.
Right.
And then my thought was, you know, when I get retirement age, I'll sell them off as I'm retired. Maybe one house a year you could sell off. And so that's been pretty much my strategy. And then when you go from houses, it's like playing Monopoly. You take the house off the property and you put a hotel on it.
Right.
Well, what I was doing then, I was getting from a single family to a duplex to a triplex to 11plex, 15plex. And then, of course, the biggest one I just sold was 58 units.
And that was a Kensington here in Winona.
Right. I had that for 19 years, and which was my first step towards slowing down as I sold that last summer.
Right. Yep. And now you have one, which is how many units?
15 is my biggest.
15, yeah. It's called the Kensington Suites here. So now you first started real estate in what year, 83?
83.
And who did you work for first?
I went to work for a company called Edstrom and Skeels.
Okay.
Nick Edstrom, Bob Skeels, just two individuals who broke off from Better Homes and Gardens and started their own. And
oh.
They started their own in like 82. They were pretty new when I joined them in 83.
Did they have a franchise?
No, just individuals, two individuals, right downtown. And then after that, I went into Coldwell Banker. I don't remember how many years. I had five or six, seven maybe. And then I bought Century 21 franchise like in about 1990.
Yep, I remember that.
Somewhere in 90, I bought Century 21, and I sold that in 2005. And then I just went on my own after 2005.
Okay, so, and didn't you work for RE/MAX for a moment?
Well, RE/MAX was kind of a short-term thing where they became my tenant in my building. So I hung my license with them.
Okay.
I think I had like a 1 or 2 year non-compete agreement.
Oh, sure. From Century 21?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I wasn't planning on competing.
Oh, you were going to be done with it then?
I was going to be done with it. So I kind of hung my license with RE/MAX. And then I just decided to go downtown because I own the Kensington and decided to combine everything, bring my real estate company to the Kensington and sell my building out west.
All right. So now we have the two-man company, which is Jacobson Real Estate. I've mentioned that multiple times on here, I think. But anyways, we have a two-man real estate company literally two doors away. Mm-hmm. And that's why this was such a hard interview to get, because he's still close and with a busy schedule, obviously, self-employed for most of your life, I would say. So yeah, now we have a two-man company, and now you get to work with me. So what would be advice for someone that wants to get into real estate? Because it seems like everyone wants to get into it, but they might not last.
Oh, advice to get into it? That's hard to say. You got to be disciplined.
Yep.
You got to think of it as a job and go to work. You got to go to work every day. You got to be available every day. If you're not, there's about 70 or 80 agents that are available.
Right.
And right now, when it's hard to get listings because the inventory is so short, you've got to, you know, be available all the time for everybody.
Yep, that's the hard part. I just had an interview with one of my former students who was doing a project for school, and she was asking me roughly the same questions. She said, well, what's your advice if you get into it? I said, well, you got to kind of make a brand for yourself, I would say, because, yeah, you might have a company or a franchise on top of your name. We don't. We're just individual, independent. But you got to make a brand for yourself, because even though some of those agents, they get under a Coldwell Banker and Edina or whatever, you got to brand yourself out there. And that's what I told her. And I said, you just got to be disciplined and put yourself to work. You have to think of it as kind of a 9-to-5, but it's not going to be, because you're probably going to end up being working at Sunday evening at some point, and you don't even expect it.
But today, real estate is so much easier than it was when I started.
Yeah, I would agree.
When I started in 83, you'd have to go to the office and check your voicemail or messages.
Yep.
You'd have to fax things out from the company fax machine. There was no emails. There was no cell phones. You had to go to work.
Yeah.
So you had to have an office. You'd have to have a desk, a place to meet people. And today there's agents that probably never go to the office. They do it from their home. They do it from their car. They do it from their country club or their boat or whatever. If you have a cell phone, you can email. You can get your messages. You can call from the beach and they don't know where you're at, but you could still get the business done. And back when I started, you had to go to work every single day.
Didn't you say that they used to have a binder of all the houses that were for sale?
Oh, yeah. You'd have a binder of all the sheets of what's happening. You get a hot sheet every day that the MLS would deliver to your office. You'd have to go to that page in the book and change the price. Or if it was sold, you'd mark it sold. And if the price changed, you got to pull it out of the three-ring binder and move it to the price where it now becomes. And and then it's 24 hours old. I mean, the next time you get a change is 24 hours. If it's a weekend, it's 3 days before you get a change. Today, it's instant. I mean, you know right away if a house is sold or not sold, the price goes down. And it's just so much easier. If I had that technology 41 years ago, I think I would have sold a lot more.
Probably.
But everybody probably would have.
Yeah. So you said that if you would have had that technology, it would have been a lot easier back in the day?
Yeah, it would have been easier. But like I said, I would have sold more, but everybody would have probably sold more. Maybe we would have had too many agents. That's one thing about the public always thinks there's too many agents. In Winona, the agents per capita is really not much compared to like Rochester or California or Florida. I just read somewhere like one out of every 100 people in California have a real estate license. That's 1% of your population.
That's a lot of people.
Well, if you had 1% of Winona, that'd be like 250 agents, and we've got like 70 or 80. So our agents per capita are nothing compared to the bigger cities. But they sell multi-million dollar properties, so you can have a lot of agents that sell one or two houses in a year, and it makes it worth their time. So we're not oversaturated with agents, but back then, I think we had about 100 agents when I first got in.
Oh, that's more than we got now, roughly.
Yeah, I think we had about 100.
So well, you're saying that, well, do you need a refill?
I suppose we
might
could,
as well.
As long as you're up.
Well, I'm up.
It'll be my last one.
So I guess my question is then, for those who are out there, you know that you use pretty much Zillow or Trulia. Or realtor.com is probably how you find out when houses are for sale. And you probably even get a notification.
That's enough.
That's enough. I'll cut them off.
I have to go back to work yet today.
So how did you know if a house was pending or sold with if there's no internet? How did you?
Well, you would look through your three-ring binder and see if you had written down that was sold recently. And if you really want to know up to date, you'd have to call the agent and say, what's the status? Here's another thing. In the old days, you'd call somebody up to show their house, and they would be like, yeah, I'll get it ready. I can't wait. I'm going to get everything ready for you, because they didn't see many agents showing houses because we had lots of inventory. I think our average inventory back then was about 150 to 170 houses.
Oh, that's a lot.
Today we've got about 25 houses in the city. There's probably 40 in the whole county. But today when you call somebody up to show it, they're like, you know, I've had so many agents here. I think I'm going to have an offer. I'd hate to clean it up and get it ready. They don't want to see you as much.
Yeah.
They want it sold with little work. But back then, they were happy to see you because there was so many houses to compete with. And they had to make it look attractive. They had to give bonuses. They had to give incentives. They had to turn the lights on and make it smell nice. And then they would call you up and find out how was your showing. Today, it's like, you run out and show a house. If you want to do something, you better do it quick because there's probably 10 more offers coming.
Right.
So that's changed a lot when there's hardly any inventory.
Well, and I've only been actively using my license for less than 10 years. And when I first started, it was like 120-ish was what was on the market. In the last like 4 years, ever since COVID or just prior, it was like 30 max. And of that 30, there were some that were unaffordable for most the average person. You know, a couple $500,000, $600,000, $700,000
I think right now
more.
Under... half a million, under 500, there's like 16 in the city of Winona.
That are active. Now, some of them, folks, they have a contingency on them. And the problem with, here's what the problem is with Zillow and Realtor. It doesn't say if they're contingent. It only says that it's active. So then when someone contacts me, I look and then I go, well, it's contingent. And they go, what does that mean? I go, well, it means they accepted an offer, but it might have a contingency on an inspection. And so that doesn't show up online, unfortunately, but it does show up when it's pending, at least. Now, the question I had before was, if someone accepted an offer, how did you know with no internet and just a three-ring binder? Like, what if you were going to go show it the next day? And
maybe just call them and make sure it's still available and show it.
You said do it old
school.
Most
of the time, it was available because they said it took months to sell a house back then. Mm-hmm. It would take, you take a six-month listing and hope you could sell it in 6 months.
Yeah.
Today, you take a six-month listing and it's sold in
about a week,
10 days,
yeah.
14 days.
Yep. That's the thing. If you price it right, they're gone immediately.
Right.
So nowadays, a little bit different, even though the interest rates are somewhat high. What were the interest rates when you got in?
Oh, boy. I got in 83, and they were just coming down to 14%. They were at 18. They were at 18 in 81. They were at 18%. And I got in at 14, and people were doing contract for deeds for about 10% to make it attractive. So 10% contract was way better than the 14 or 12 at the bank. And I remember we'd sit at the sales meeting thinking, you know, if we could just get the rates to 10%, this market will take off. We just got to get it down to 10%. And I bought my first house, it was 9%, and that was in 77. And from 77, it went up. But we got it under 10, but the price of houses were, you know, so cheap. I was selling houses anywhere from 15,000 to 45 to 50,000.
Wow.
One time I sold a house that was 86,000 in Goodview, and my broker said to me, wow, you're going to get a big commission. The commission was like $800.
Ooh.
Today, that's nothing. I mean,
right.
I mean, we were selling mobile homes that were $5,000, and you'd make about $250 commission check.
Oof.
I know, and now we don't sell mobile homes.
Yeah. Because there's no land.
Right.
That's the one thing people don't understand is that real estate, we're actually selling the land, and there just happens to be a house or a building attached to the land.
Right. We sell real estate, which is land.
Yes.
And anything attached to it, which would be the house.
Yes.
And that's why the Commerce Department decided at one time we shouldn't be selling mobile homes unless it was on like a farmland or five-acre hobby farm. You could sell the land, and the mobile home came with it.
Right.
But just to sell the mobile home, I think some agents are still doing it, but I don't know if there's certain rules they're following or if it falls under some other category, like might be a car license. I don't know, because they have a license.
That's true. Do you have any good stories from real estate? Anything funny happen? I mean, it's been 40
years.
I've had
lots of funny ones, but like...
Give us a good one.
No, I've always had to tell them at the Christmas party. I always have to get up and tell one funny story that's happened.
Yeah, you have. You have. Well, you might as well tell on the podcast to the world now.
You really want to know? There's so many of them.
There's more people that listen to this than are at the Christmas party.
Oh, I know. There's millions of people out there that, you know, probably had funnier ones.
Well, yeah, but what do you got? What's the best one?
The one I like this one is we were going on house tour in Rolling Stone. I told this at a Christmas party a couple
years
ago.
House tour, what is a house tour, first of
all? Okay, we'd have a sales meeting every Monday morning.
Okay.
Some agencies still do that. Some of them have them on Tuesdays. But we'd have them on Monday morning, get together, talk about the open house the day before, how it went, what we're going to do this week. So Monday morning, we have a sales meeting and talk about our new listings. And then we go on a tour.
Okay.
Some places call it a caravan. So we were going on a house tour in Rolling Stone after our meeting, and the listing agent couldn't go that day, so he gave us an address. So we go to this address, pull up with about, there's probably 16 of us at the time.
Holy cow.
And everybody went on tour then. Today, I don't think half of them go on tour.
We don't.
We don't need to, because they sell so quick, you don't need to tour it and promote it.
Yeah.
So I'd say 16 people showed up. We knock on the door, and this elderly lady, which... answer the door, and our sales manager at the time said, is it okay if we tour your house? Because our listing agent wasn't with us. And she says, yeah, come on in. So we go in, we tour the house, which means you look in every room, you maybe open up a closet, see how much closet space there is, and you go in the basement and you look around, and you really look the house over, and you make comments about what it would take to sell the house, what would it make to show the house better. So you fill out an evaluation sheet and you leave. Well, when we're leaving, this lady stops us at the door and she goes, can I ask you guys a question? She said, why did you pick my house to tour it? And we're like, well, didn't you list it with our company? She goes, no, my house isn't for sale. So here, she opens the door to like 16 agents that just said, can we tour your house? And she says, come on in.
Come on in.
But the funny part was we were leaving, and she said, how did you pick my house to tour?
Looks like a good one.
So we went back to the listing agent and said, hey, we were not at the right house. So I don't know if we ever went back. I think it was like next door or a different street or something, but it was in Rolling Stone, and it was kind of, it was funny.
Didn't you realize that there was no sign in the front yard?
Well, see, that's another thing. You couldn't put up signs back then until it hit the MLS.
Okay.
It had to hit the MLS, and the sheet had to come out. You know, you send the information to MLS. They make the sheet. You don't make your own sheet. They make the sheet, and they deliver it to all the offices about a day or two later.
So someone physically delivered these things?
Oh, yeah. We had an MLS secretary. So you would give, one day they'd pick up the pictures, Polaroids, and they pick up the information. They'd take it back to the MLS office and put it together on a spec sheet.
Yeah.
And the next day they'd deliver based on how many agents you have. You had 10 agents, they'd bring you 10 pages.
Yeah.
And then that secretary would hand them out to each person in their little mailbox.
Wow.
So you got your MLS sheet, but you didn't want to sign in the yard before it hit the MLS, because if somebody calls you, nobody knows what it is and what's going on.
Wow. Something's different. I like the way I do it now. I like to make a deal on the phone, and I can type it all up and send it off virtually and get some e-signatures. And
that's why I say today it's so much easier. I put together deals on vacation.
Yeah. We've done it on cruise ships before.
We did it on cruise ships where as long as you had cell service and turned your head the certain way towards the tower, you could still talk and put together a deal until you got to the next island.
Yeah.
So we've done stuff like that. Otherwise, I would have to wait till a week I got back and check my messages and stuff like that.
So being that you've pretty much been self-employed all your life, do you prefer this, or do you think it'd be better to have a 9-to-5 job and work for someone else?
No.
No to which one?
Not the 9-to-5. I mean, when I worked for real estate companies too, there's rules you got to follow with franchises.
Mm-hmm.
And I owned the Century 21 franchise, and even then, as being self-employed, you had to still follow their rules. You had to go to their conventions or conferences, follow their rules. It's good for some people.
Yeah.
But if you're self-motivated and have some direction, there's nothing better. You can do what you want to do and do it how you want to do it. You don't have to pay franchise fees. That's another thing. You know, you usually have to pay about 8% of your commission goes to a franchise. And what they do with it, they advertise on TV and...
Sure.
And like the home run derby at the All-Star game, you see the Century 21 home run derby. So when you pay your 8% franchise fees, it goes to that national advertising.
Right. So there are some perks about it, but you also lose some money. So those who work for a franchise probably have to work a little bit harder or have more sales than someone that just owns their own like you do. So that's always good to know because, again, you got to be self-motivated and you have to literally tell yourself, I'm going to go work. And I think nowadays, I think the most important thing is branding yourself. Branding, branding, branding. And no, not Coldwell Banker's my brand or whatever the other ones are, Century 21. It's got to be you individually.
Yes.
So that's what I've been learning to do with the podcast. I've been kind of trying to brand it and make it what it is. And hopefully something will turn of it someday. Who knows? I got the little microphone things here. So we need to get
this as
a sign sitting here somewhere. I need to make a sign like this. I think it'd be sweet.
They can interview people.
Yeah.
I figure out how to take this show mobile. So like if we wanted to walk around the shop on the cruise ship, you could take it mobile. You can walk around. I don't know. Did they do that on podcasts?
Yes. And I'm going to do. Well, that would probably be what you call a YouTube short or a TikTok or something like that. You would do. You wouldn't do a large one. But there are microphones you just clip onto here and they're Bluetooth and they go right into your phone and you could literally start filming and it'll sound just like this into your phone instead of echoey like it normally would if you shot some little phone video at something else. So,
because if we had that, we could walk around and talk about different cars here and point things out about each one. Or you can stop by and visit us sometime. We're here probably 10 times, 12 times a year. We're here for certain events.
Oh, yeah. Super Bowl party.
Super Bowl party. At a WrestleMania party. Yep. We've had Christmas parties.
This last year, we opened it up to the post-car show party. That was actually well-received.
Steamboat Days. We opened it up to the Steamboat Days participants or spectators.
Yeah.
And we've done class reunions, family reunions. So if you ever want to get a chance, just get a hold of Chris or myself through Facebook is the easiest. And we're usually pretty happy to show the place if it's not all torn apart, because a lot of times I'm working on something, so things are moved around and we have to put them back for certain things. We meet here every other month for our Landlords Association, or the Winona Housing Association. So so we're here 10, 12 times a year.
Yeah, we host quite a few things. It's fun. WrestleMania was just recently. I think we should do the post-car show party again. I think that was good. All you do is open the garage door up. We opened and had some pizzas. People came in. It was a little hot, but that was okay. But that's what the guy that had this place previously did. He was the guy that started putting on or took over the car show and made it as big as it is. And then he would open up this place and people could just come in. He would bring in pizzas from five different local businesses in town. And people would just come in and BS as they wanted and left as they wanted as well. Last year we had a guy so drunk he was talking to the mannequin back there.
Yeah, we have a mannequin here and somebody thought it was real and he was talking to her.
He was so drunk.
I don't know if he didn't know or...
He was drunk.
And she's still sitting right where she was.
I'm going to interview her someday.
You can just see her by the race car, by number 99 back there. She's been there for a couple of years. A friend of mine picked up a couple mannequins for me. I got one, the Pennzoil race car driver over there in the Pennzoil section. And we got a lady serving drinks out of the cooler back there. We
got
Elvis. So a friend of mine got me some of these mannequins. And they're pretty cool to have. They're hard to get, too. You can't get mannequins today. You know why?
Why?
Because they don't. The mannequins today won't show a face, and they won't show like a skin color. Or if they do, it's got to be balanced out because of the woke society.
Oh my gosh!
And if you look at Macy's or anyone that's got mannequins, the today's mannequins have no face on them, so you can't really tell if it's a male or female. Sometimes, unless the way it's dressed or what section it's in. But to get an old mannequin like this is really hard to do. And I think some of these are like $1,000 to get.
Holy cow. I saw one at the Mall of America that had a beer belly. It was a man when I sent it to Matt. And I said, here's your mannequin.
Yeah, you can't get them. Now, Jim's got a bunch of them. I think he got them. I can't remember if he got them from Penny's.
He goes to a lot of antique stores, though. That's the one thing, you go to antique stores.
Yeah, he bought a bunch of them. I tried to get some from him, and they're hard to get.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add to the podcast? We've been going for an hour or more.
Has it really been an hour?
Yeah, it's almost.
There's a lot of things we could add.
Well, we can do a part two as well, because Hurley came back for part two. So he's like, let's go do a part two. And that
here's the other thing we added that nobody has noticed yet is the elevator in here.
Oh, yeah, we had an elevator.
Yep, nobody has used it yet. I added that last summer.
Well, one time I flushed and I went down to the basement there.
But it's clearly marked elevator. There's the basement plus five floors.
Yep.
Not sure where it ends up, but you just got to push the button, but nobody's even asked to use it. So there is an elevator here now.
Well, that's good. Are your cars ready to go for the summer?
You know, I got them ready for the winter right before we left on cruise, which is really late.
March.
Well, at the end of February, stabilizer in the gas tanks. Put them all on battery chargers or tenders, so I was way late. I should have done this in November. But finally in February, I got them ready for the winter. So they should be all ready to go. Everything should start. Everything should run. There's usually a little bit of dust on them, but I clean them for parties. I usually only have to wash them once or twice a year.
Yep.
So they're pretty much all ready to go. That's people ask me that too, is how do you take care of them? Well, it takes some time.
Yeah, people don't realize you got to put tenders on them and all that and make sure the batteries go dead if you don't
batteries
drive much.
Batteries go dead. I'm buying batteries every year. I'm putting air in the tires.
Gas goes bad.
Checking for leaks. The gas gets old, and you got to put stabilizer in there and then get some fresh gas in there and start them up. And sometimes I move them all forward a couple feet, and then I'll move them all back a couple feet so the tires aren't compressed in the same spot all the time. So that's one thing that is hard to do with a place like this, is to maintain them all. If it was truly like a museum, then I would have them like up on jacks and take the weight off of the tires and take the fluids out of them. That would be truly a museum, which is not what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have a garage where I can come and take a car out for a drive. And this has just been a gathering of things I've had. I mean, I had the big garage under the bridge where the Fastenal office building is now. I had a garage there, and I had probably six or seven cars in there. I had four of them out in Goodview in my garage. I had a couple at home. And when this place became available, I brought all my cars in one spot. All the stuff I've been collecting, like the bicycles hanging up.
Oh, yeah, Justin's bicycle's still up there.
Some of your toys from when you were little are up there, and the trophies. All the trophies from car shows are around here. But this became just a gathering of all the things I've had collected in different garages, and people would think, like, I think Mom thought I was a hoarder, and I wasn't a hoarder. I was saving all these cool things.
For this one moment.
For this garage. Those chrome rims, as pretty as
they are.
Those
are sweet, though. Those are cool.
But those have curb rash on them, which means the chrome is scuffed up on them. They're from the T-Bird. They came with the T-Bird when I bought them. Most people would throw them away.
You can't tell up there.
You can't tell. Sweet. There's shiny chrome rims that are on display up there. And I thought about making coffee tables out of these
rims. That'd be sweet, too.
Yeah, a lot of things in here have just been repurposed from other things and put together into one location.
Yeah. What's your favorite car in here to drive? If you had to take one of them out, which one are you taking?
I still don't know.
I think you like the Supra the most.
Well, the Supra is modern, and that's more like your car.
Yeah, but you like
that. So I tell
people,
on this side is older, classic things, and the newer stuff on the other side is basically the things you own or take care of.
Right.
So I think you have four of them?
Four or five, something like that. Four.
Those are titled in your name or insured in your name, and you have to maintain them.
Yes, I do.
Eventually, you have to maintain all of them or get rid of them.
Shit.
And people ask me, you think your son will just get rid of all those cars after you're dead and gone? I'm like, I don't know. Probably we'll combine them all into one expensive one, but then you'd have this great big garage with one or two cars in here.
And pinball machines. I like pinball machines.
I think I'll go for a ride in my car and then go back and play pinball machines.
That sounds pretty fun to me. Well, which car would you take out then if you had to take one? Which one's your favorite?
That Model A up front is fun to drive, but I've got it parked at an angle and tucked in there, and I only take that about once a year. I took it out last year. I took it to...
Doesn't even have power steering.
I think it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Well, it's got power windows, power locks.
Doesn't have power steering, though.
DVD player, air conditioning.
I remember that was the one thing that guy told us when he bought that. It does not have power steering. And when you drove it home, it was fine, because when you're going fast, it doesn't matter as much. But when you get down to a slow speed and you're turning around going 15 miles an hour, that thing's tough.
Yeah, we've had that coming back from the cities at like 75 on the highway. Rides fine.
Yeah.
But that one's fine. Where did I take it this last? I took it to a car show, I think.
Either you took it to a car show or you took it to cruise night per usual.
Yeah, so I took that out at least once. But then, like I said, to park it at an angle, I got it back and forth and get it just right. But I think, I don't know if I took it to Goodview Days. Now, this year I took the 57 Chevy to Tremplo Catfish Days.
And you won an award.
I got first place for People's Choice Award, which is 110 or 120 cars
something
there.
Something like that, yeah.
I was shocked that it was people's choice. I mean, I know my car, and I don't sit and look at it and stuff. I usually look at other cars, and I look at all these other cars that look so much nicer, or because they're new to me, and then they call my name for the people's choice. It's kind of shocking. And then a couple of years before that, the 58 Ford, the green one, we got people's choice on that one about 4 years before that. So...
That one's sharp looking.
That one's very sharp looking, but that one I haven't taken out for probably 2 years now.
Yeah, I would probably say that.
So we go to, I'll go to Goodview Days, Steamboat Days, Catfish Days, sometimes I go to Buffalo City, whatever that's called.
Denny Schmitnick. Denny Schmitnick's memorial now. It was just like the doings.
So we do about...
just the doings.
We do about three or four car shows, and we go to Lakeview. Lakeview has a drive-in car show.
An old root beer stand, basically. If you come to Winona ever, you need to go to Lakeview Drive-In. They have the best root beer, at least in Winona, if not in Minnesota. And it gets rave reviews because it's our oldest, fun fact, it's our oldest
restaurant
in Winona.
1935, I think, or 30.
It was in the 30s. I just don't remember specific. It was one of our trivia questions we had a couple weeks ago.
Started off as Emil's Rip Beer Stand.
Yes.
Emil Brzezinski.
Shout out to the Gloszewski family and Lakeview. They are clients of ours and friends of ours as well.
Tim actually donated to my convertible, the serving tray from our drive-in.
Yep.
And the basket and I think the ketchup and mustard holder. He donated that to this place.
Yeah, Tim is always he's a huge car guy. He's into he likes trucks now. He's got a nice truck. He
Tim
wins
is into
everywhere
trucks,
he goes.
Yep.
He wins with that thing everywhere. I think it's the bright red that people just
he's got a sharp Ford pickup. I believe it's. A
I think
Ford.
It's Ford. Yeah, because he got rid of what did he have a Galaxy before?
He had a Ford Galaxy. Yep.
Yeah, he had that red convertible Galaxy. He won with that too, but then he got that Ford and he redid the whole thing, and now he wins just about everywhere he goes. But not many people have a nice. Classic truck.
He's got an awesome Christmas card with that. Have you ever seen the Christmas card?
I don't think I have. He needs to send me one. Tim, send me a Christmas card.
His family and I think his dog on the Christmas card in front of the red and white, mostly red Ford pickup.
Sure.
So it's really sharp. And when he sets that up at a car show, he's got Trixie, which is a lady that sits in the passenger seat. Another mannequin.
Not a woke mannequin?
No. And Trixie sits in the passenger seat. Yeah. And he's usually got the speakers from the drive-in.
Oh, that's right. He's got the speakies.
I had him here for a talkies. Little bit. I had him set up here for a little bit.
What are they called, talkies?
No, what were they called? Just
speakers?
Just the speakers from a drive-in a drive-in movie theater.
Yeah.
So I had those set up in here for a while, thanks to Tim.
Most of the time when you go to the car shows, it's everyone you know from around the area, and they're just there to have a good time and just basically set up a lawn chair, hang out, and talk is all it is. It's just really a get-together is all that car shows are for people.
Yeah. And Lakeview only does it once a month now during the three summer months. They used to do it every Wednesday, and they cut that back to once a month, which I wish they would bring back like every other Wednesday would be good.
Right.
And there's talk of starting another get-together somewhere in Winona. There was talk about meeting at the levee.
Like, that'd be cool. That'd be fun.
But the city wasn't receptive to that. They just didn't want a bunch of cars and people hanging around the levee. For no reason, and then you'd have food trucks and things like that. And
well, that sounds amazing.
They weren't receptive to it, but there's people that would like to get together and have like a weekly drive-in type of thing. And other cities do. I mean, like you got Rudy's down La Crosse that I don't know how often they meet.
Yes,
I think they're every other something. Yeah, Rudy's.
And then you just met a guy that does the open up your man cave, and your car is right there. It's like, I know they call it cars and coffee, but I think he called it something else.
Cars and caves up in the cities, which we got to go to that because there's 120 caves, they call them man caves.
Yeah.
That's probably going to change too with the woke society. They're people caves. But they call them cars and caves, and it's the last Saturday of the month they open them to the public, and you can come in and look at a place like this. They're not as big, though. Most of them are like 2 to 4 cars because these people buy a section of a garage, like a co-op.
Yep.
And each garage might have like each building might have 10, 12 different man caves in them. So they open their garage door up, and on a Saturday, and it's all free. You walk in. They look for donations for really good causes. There's like humane societies and stuff, and you can throw a couple bucks in a box, or you just walk around, look at people's cars and toys for free. Every last Saturday of the month, and then every certain Wednesday of the month, too, they have them.
Okay.
But I just talked to the guy at the Minnesota Auto Show, and he was the guy that had Batmobiles and Starsky and Hutch cars. And
a lot of movie memorabilia cars.
Right. So you that's we got to do that because that one is really a cool one. And Hastings, I think, is every other Saturday, maybe, up in Hastings?
Yeah, there was something up there. I can't remember. I thought it was Wednesdays, but maybe it's Saturdays.
So a lot of towns have them, but Winona is not quite there yet. It's just...
Well, I don't get it. Do they think that we're going to be, peeling out? Or
there's people that will spin their tires and take off, and that's usually not much of a car show person. That's more of a younger gearhead kid that wants to just spin his tires, and it's... You get that no matter where you go, but people that have a nice car at a car show, they just don't do that.
Well, if you look at these cars, we don't spin the tires on them because we take
Tim
care
Gloszewski
of
them. Tim Gloszewski did at Knitcraft.
Oh, Tim. Tim did it.
That's when he was younger. He lit them up there pretty good. And other than that, you don't see it too much.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Way back in the old days, I used to go up and down 3rd Street before my time even. Yeah. Cars would just cruise 3rd Street in Winona.
We used to do that when I was in high school, too. There's cars just weren't as cool, but you didn't think these were cool either back in the day. They were just random cars. Every time we go to a car show, you go, oh, that was just something grandma's had or your mom had. Yeah. And nowadays, it's something that people would drool over.
And now there's nothing today really to collect that are like modern cars. I don't know what you would collect today.
Well, I think a Challenger Hellcat would be one to collect.
Yeah, but that's because it was made that way.
Right.
Back then, I mean, just your everyday car, like your Nova.
Yeah.
Your Nova was a cheap little car that your parents had, or the Ford Galaxy, or an Impala, or Chevelle. And that was nothing back in high school. And then as they disappeared off the streets,
yeah,
and people started bringing them back and fixing them up.
Well, I guess some of them would be the Toyota Supra, the Mach 4, which is the generation before this one, the mid-90s, late-90s one. That one is a collector's one now, but it's because of Fast and the Furious, but that's okay. There's certain one of those, like the Japanese-style ones, those ones are now collectible because of Fast and the Furious. But I can't, yeah, I'm trying to think back now. If I look back, what would I collect nowadays just because? I don't know if anything, really.
And what would you do if there was no more gasoline, thanks to some of our government officials that think we should be all electric? What do you do with collector cars like this? Convert them all to battery-operated? They wouldn't be the same vehicle.
I know.
But think about that. If you couldn't even go to a gas station anymore and get a tank of gas because they don't want lawnmowers in gas. They don't want leaf blowers in gas. They don't want cars in gas. Everything's supposed to be electric.
That's
what
a good
do you do with old cars? You can't convert every one of these to a battery operated.
I guess you dump the gas out and it becomes a museum.
It would probably have to become a museum if that ever happened, but it's not going to happen in my lifetime. But
mine.
More and more push for this electric vehicle thing is it's crazy.
I hope that's not the case because I don't want to do that. I like my gas powered. I want a TRX. I want a Ram TRX.
And if you want to take one out, you got to get here, 5 hours ahead of time and charge it up 5 hours before you want to take it out?
Well, we basically have all these on batteries anyways, battery tenders. They're all electric cars. Yeah, I know that would suck. I don't want that to happen. It's cool having some of them, but I don't want them all to be that way. So.
Well, see, the one that I would get rid of, like we talked about, would be the Chrysler
Crossfire.
Crossfire.
Yep.
And that's because that is my wife's car. And
exactly.
She will agree to get rid of it if we got like a Corvette or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. Well, I would agree with that too.
That came from her parents who drove it until they were like about 80 years old.
No, they were older than that.
Older than 80s?
Well, they were born in 28. Juice died in 2020. Cheat died in 2023. They were still coming to my baseball games.
Oh, I know. We bought it right about when we opened this garage. I bought the garage
17?
In 17, so we okay. bought it in about 18 or 19. So.
Yeah.
So let's say we bought it in 19. What year were they born? 20?
28 and 29.
Okay, do the math.
Okay, you're in your mid-80s.
That's 80. That's like 80s.
Because they came and watched baseball game in Pine Island with it.
So they had this two-door convertible Crossfire muscle car. Basically, it's a muscle car.
It's a V6 muscle-ish.
After you go 60-some miles an hour, the spoiler actually comes up to keep the back
yeah.
end down. So she bought that from her parents so that we would have it instead of just selling it to anybody else. And I've had
right.
people that like that one. People ask me if I want to sell that one. I'm like, it's okay with me if it's okay with my wife.
It's got a nice interior, though. That maroon interior is nice.
And it doesn't take up much space.
No. It's
and that
simple.
One's been dependable. I put a battery in it. Like, I do all of them. I put the battery in like a year or two ago. But otherwise, that thing starts. It runs nice. It's easy enough to keep clean. It's small.
I remember when I had to find that for him, but 2005, I think. That was when I was first on, like, Auto Trader. And I had to find them a car. I think they went all the way to Madison to buy that. And I think it only had, like, 40,000 miles on it at the time. It's a 2004 or 5, so it's almost brand new. But Mercedes is the one that kind of has their hand in some of that. So I found that for Juice and Cheat, and then Mom bought it. And if you're getting rid of it, I guess it's a C8 Corvette, it sounds like.
Well, she said we could if we got a Corvette that she would agree to. So if you say...
I showed Mom some, so...
Which one would I get rid of? Yeah, but the ones you showed her were like 100 and plus, weren't
well,
they?
Well, no, there was anywhere ranging from 80 to 150.
Oh.
Depends how much power you want.
And those were used, weren't they?
Some were new, some were... They were right in Rochester.
Yeah.
You want to go there, we can go look at it.
The thing is, all mine are such low mileage, too.
Yeah, that right next to us, you can't see, there's a Thunderbird. It's a black 2002 Thunderbird. That was the first thing that kind of started all this off before the 55 sedan delivery. What do you have on that?
6,000 miles.
6,000 miles.
And it's 20-some years old.
Yeah, that's not very many per...
Still original tires, original everything. The tires would be a scary thing at a high mileage, like miles per hour. If you went up in a highway, they don't recommend once your tire is over 10 years old, you shouldn't be driving like 60 or 70 miles an hour on a highway because they heat up and they can shred. Now, these are 20-some years old. The only difference is mine are always been indoors. They haven't seen the sun because the sun will eat up the rubber. But taking it around town or a car show, I have no worries about that. But someday, you're going to have to start replacing tires on probably everything in here because a lot of these tires are 20-plus years old.
Yay.
They look fine.
Yeah, they look good.
But they just don't recommend taking a tire out at a high speed because they could shred on you as you're going 65 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's time to go to trivia.
Is it that late already?
It's 6:22.
Okay, well, on part two, we'll talk about the newest cars that we're acquired since part one.
You might see a new car in the background. And now, I told you this in a previous episode, that this is an active garage. So that car behind us won't be there that much longer because the weather's getting nice. It's a convertible. I take that out all the time. So you'll probably see the Supra back there or the Challenger or the Camaro or something else. So I guess that's where we're going to end it. Reminder, if you want to and if you're feeling inclined to, subscribe on YouTube. Give it a like. Give it a comment. Go on to Apple Podcasts. Go on to Spotify, iHeartRadio. You can download it on those major platforms. There's other platforms that I have too, but give it a 5-star review, leave a review, share it with someone. I am going to start doing giveaways, so be prepared to be listening for giveaways because they are coming as I am in month four. Once I get to about that 6-month period, we're going to start having some fun here. But please subscribe, like, comment, and this has been another episode of Brews and Crews with my dad, Rich Jacobson, who actually owns Speakeasy Studios. And now you know the man behind the garage. Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Thank you.